Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studios right here in the heart of Hudson County. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always in Union City and Weehawken collectively. Yes, folks, you know what we're doing? We are working the marks here. And I am New Jersey's premier and award-winning journalist, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR superstar, the immaculate, the illustrious, the glorious, Patrick Rivera. What's going on, PBR?
Well, you already know I hate Sweet Caroline. That's one thing that's going on. But aside from that, I'm very excited. Pretty good game yesterday for my 49ers, the NFC West champions. Fern, they're doing that thing to me again. They're making me believe, and I hate when they do that because they only let me down. I'm sure you can understand where I'm coming from with this. I mean,
absolutely,
every time they make me believe, it's like, oh, why are you doing this to me? You know? So, but let's see. Let's see. I'm happy. I'm happier than a pig and shit. I'm happier than Vince in a brothel. I'm happier than Mandy Rose on OnlyFans. We got a lot to talk about, and I can't wait.
That's right. And, folks, again, write to us. We love getting your feedback here. WorkinTheMarks@gmail.com. Once again, WorkinTheMarks@gmail.com. The show obviously brought to you by Famcast Media, obviously in partnership with the podcast. D-Ron, our great administrator on the site. Love him as well, everything he does. Check us out on Instagram, folks, at Working_the_Marks. As well as checking out our own Instagrams at Patty Rican, that's PaddyRican. Of course, yours truly at the Fernando Zone. And also on Twitter, folks, shoot us a tweet whenever you can at Working_Marks. Certainly hit us up as well on our own personal Twitters at Patrick SKVM and also at the Fernando Zone. You know, hey, shoot us a tweet. Also hit us up on Instagram. It's nice to see we're not being a shadow banned as much as before. So that's a good thing. Hit us up on social media.
Get a new gimmick, bro.
Sure.
Just get a new gimmick. Nobody censors your speech. You just said stupid shit. That's it. It's that simple. God,
I'm just
what
saying.
The fuck?
Well, when you push my stuff to the bottom of the news feed, it's not as prevalent on the top of it.
Maybe that should tell you how important it fucking is or lack thereof, you know?
Well, that's
maybe
that'll
tell you how important it is or lack thereof, that it belongs on the bottom, but that's a whole other separate case, all right? You know?
Well, folks, hit us up on our social media. Obviously, that good not to be censored as much anymore. Hit us up. Share our episodes whenever you can by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks, all one word. We appreciate all, because remember, folks, sharing is caring here on Blog Talk Radio. Obviously, it is a free Christmas edition episode here on the podcast. So we're happy for all of you tuning in from wherever and however you may be getting your podcast anywhere online, folks. Pat, you know, I got to tell you, man, a busy week here in the world of professional wrestling. Let's get to the news. Certainly, perhaps, I mean, obviously, we'll get to the other big news, which is our main event topic this week. But Amanda Rose Sacramento, a New Jersey native, who goes by the ring name of Mandy Rose, it was a big controversial release this week. She dropped the NXT Women's Championship on Tuesday, and obviously that set, you know, Twitterverse on fire, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere else. Like, wow, wait a minute. It's like the longest reigning, one of the longest reigning NXT Women's Champions in quite some time, obviously. She was nowhere near Asuka's reign, but she, you know, and or Shayna Baszler's, but she was up there. And we were like, wow, look at, and we're just dropping the title here. And subsequently on Wednesday morning, it was reported that Mandy Rose was released by WWE as a result of, I guess, explicit photos that she was making available. Not on OnlyFans, apparently it's sort of a competitive site to OnlyFans, but it seemed like, you know, Mandy Rose's incredible run in NXT came to an end, obviously, after those photos were leaked. It's being reported, Pat, that she was making somewhere in the neighborhood of $250,000 a month in distributing this content on this exclusive website. When you do the math over the course of a full calendar year, that's about $3 million. Obviously, you know, for tax purposes, that's obviously a 1099. You certainly have to pay taxes on that. That's a large amount of money. But it seems like she was making these photos, very revealing photos were available. And that's apparently she violated a clause in the contract, I guess, that she has with WWE. More information came out this week that apparently because of WWE's relationship with Mattel and obviously with action figures being as popular of a demographic in a sector and a market that there is, WWE did not feel comfortable having her on the roster, having her employed specifically with this contract with Mattel, and she was released. Now, a lot of chat has been coming out, though, Pat. And interesting, you know, obviously everyone seems to have an opinion online. Obviously, there's been a big, hashtag rehire Mandy. A lot of people have taken to the internet. A lot of writers and columnists have opined, whether it be former talent like AJ Lee, the wife of Phil Brooks, a.k.a. CM Punk. She's come out adamant about sort of the perception of hypocrisy in her release. Dirt Sheet Radio with an interesting column here real quick. I'll just read you a paragraph here, which I think is really, kind of summarizing the outrage that's collectively online right now. And it goes like this. You gotta talk about double standards here. A big part of Mandy Rose's character was that she's attractive. Hell, WWE literally promoted her to be that. WWE's official page has posted several not-so-child-friendly pictures of her. And yet, her posting pictures on her own page, is that okay? It's almost like WWE can make money off of the fact that Mandy is good-looking, but Mandy cannot make a few extra bucks because of literally the same reason. Moreover, to add to the hypocrisy, while I understand that it can be bad for PR, but Matt Riddle has had multiple wellness policy failures. And don't get me wrong, if you've seen any of the posts, I absolutely love Matt Riddle, but can't ignore the double standards here. Also, Jimmy Uso has had multiple DUIs, and how did they punish him? By making them the longest-reigning tag team champions in WWE history. And to top everything else, if the rumors are true about Vince McMahon might end up resuming his post in WWE after everything, well, give me a break. If Mandy Rose is getting fired for a few super offensive photos, really, we're going to overlook this? That seems to be kind of like the mainstream chatter, man, from Sean Ross Sapp, as well as others who've taken to online and really defending Mandy Rose. Again, AJ Lee talking about WWE uses their women featured on the cover of Playboy for years, and, quote, fans could, quote, pay money to buy the product to see the photos. Why letting her go? I don't understand. AJ Lee also took to Twitter saying, Vince McMahon built that business off exploiting and hypersexualizing women, not to mention the hundreds of sexual harassment claims made by women in the company. Yet Mandy posting some risque pictures lost her the title and her career. Yeah, okay. A lot of outrage online, Pat. How do you see this, bro?
Well, color me surprised. My first question is, I thought nobody watched NXT. Haven't you heard all your Mark friends? I've heard my Mark friends. I've heard everybody and their mother that watches wrestling tell me, I don't watch NXT. NXT sucks. But as soon as there's a controversy, as soon as something pops up that makes them think that they can go and shit on WWE, they're going to jump at that opportunity because we know that there is no more toxic relationship in the history of the business than the fans and the WWE / Vince. You know what I mean? For me, I mean, and what's her name? What's her real name, Mandy?
Amanda Rose Sacramento.
Bueno, bastante gente sacaron la mano.
Yeah, well, not
bastante gente sacaron la mano.
There you go.
Okay.
No relation.
Están mirando esa foto ahí. Who the fuck's Bob Sacramento?
Oh, that was a character.
Who's that guy?
No relation to Bob Sacramento.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, Mandy Sacramento had a contract with WWE. Mandy Sacramento was a fitness model. Okay. Mandy Sacramento decided to become a WWE superstar or to train to become a WWE superstar. She was contracted. She was trained. She was trained enough to be able to get her on TV. Unfortunately, she wasn't all that great by herself. But the look, the sex appeal, it's undeniable. You know what I'm saying? So that's a big part of it, obviously. You know, obviously AJ is entitled to her opinion. I respect that. You know, I respect anybody who's been in the business's take on this, whether I agree with it or not. I definitely don't respect the take of fucking Mark journalists, because all they're fucking doing is just finding an opportunity to shit on WWE yet again, because they're mad that Vince didn't put over this one guy, or because, you know, if they would have let Booker T win at WrestleMania, you know, it would have been different. If he would have won at WrestleMania 19, it would have been great. And if this would have happened, and if they would have beat Triple H, you know, then the world would be a better place. Well, too bad. It's not how it works out. All right? You think fucking Luke Skywalker wanted to lose his hand? You think Darth Vader wanted to be fucking cooked up? None of these characters want to deal with what the fuck you're dealing with. Let's be real. Okay?
Well, Pat,
but you're telling a fucking story. Okay?
Well, Pat, let me ask you this, though. Here's an interesting, I mean, just reading sort of the countless amount of tweets from the past few days. And here's an interesting question. Somebody wrote, obviously, I think on Dirt Sheet Radio's Twitter page, why go straight to firing? If they had such a problem with her page, or was against her or it was against her contract, why not ask her to close it down first? Seems
okay.
Like a lose-lose on their end, having rebuilt her character on NXT.
No.
Now they've lost all that time in a solid performer. Again, a lot of stuff behind the cart. Like you always say it perfectly.
That's what I'm saying, bro.
That we don't know about. Possibly.
Yeah.
But
Fern, they could have tried to mediate that, bro. Look, anybody with a brain on their head, okay, who doesn't think Tony Khan's a good booker, can look at her and say, "Yo, we can make money off this chick." Matt Riddle, you can look at him and go, "Yo, we can make money off this guy." There's people that have that look. There's people that people want to see that are charismatic. And that's what the business is built on, whether people like it or not. So wrestling, that's just a little supplementary shit, but it's really about the stories you tell with the characters that you have. That's what draws house. You know what I'm saying? But getting back to Mandy, Mandy signed a contract with WWE to be a talent, and she became Mandy Rose. And they tried to do whatever with her, and then they put her with Sonya Deville, and then that didn't work out. But WWE didn't want to miss out on what they could potentially have with her. So they sent her back to developmental. They sent her back to NXT to train with the people down there, to work with the trainers, to work with the coaches, to get herself to the point where she could be what they think she could be and maybe what she wants to be. And in fairness, I give her a ton of credit, man, because she applied herself. She really put her nose down. She did exactly what she needed to do to get herself to that point where she could be taken seriously as a dominant champion. And then they gave her the two girls in the stable with her. And Toxic Attraction was dope. That stable was cool. It was good shit. It was good shit. You know what I'm saying? But what I think happened was, and from what I've read, from what I've heard, and again, you know, we got to wait till Body comes out with the news. Because Body, you know, for anybody who's listening, we've said this a million times, Billy Body's the most reliable guy. You don't have to like him as a person. You don't have to like his politics. You don't have to like anything else. But the guy gets reliable wrestling news consistently. But from what I understand, they didn't have an issue with her doing the website and posing in bikini pictures, because bikini pictures are fine. And if that's what they're referring to by risque photos, or, you know, not safe for work, you know, or whatever they want to call it, like, it was just her in a bikini. It's like it's what they've done for years, okay? And they put her in a bikini. But the thing that people forget is that when you sign that contract, you become WWE's little piece of clay. And they can mold you into whatever the fuck they want you to be, okay? They could have turned her into Tammy Tijuana, party girl, and that could have been her fucking gimmick. And she could have come out there sloppy drunk or something. Or they could have made her Helga, the fucking Swedish yodeler. And she would just yodel all the time or something, or Swiss yodeler. You know, whatever. They could turn her whatever the fuck they want her to be, okay? Because they are giving you a global platform to get yourself out there, to let people know who you are, to take you from being a fitness model to being a global superstar that's recognized and could potentially even get into movies. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of fair for them to want their cut for giving you a platform to do your thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, personally, from what I'm seeing, I think they asked her to tone it, where they probably said, "Hey, do the bikini photos, do that stuff. It goes with the gimmick. But, yo, no nudes, nothing crazy." Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, it was risque photos. Dude, she was showing her tits in a pool. Pardon my French. Okay?
Yeah.
Pardon my French. You know?
Yeah.
And by the way, I left Les Blues this weekend in the World Cup final, you know? But, you know, she was just basically in a hot tub with her breasts out in the water in a bikini. Okay? You could clearly see her breasts. It's not like it was something where, like, it was, like, hiding behind, like, or it was, like, it was dressed like John Candy and the other one was Steve Martin and it's fucking Planes, Trains, and Automobiles on her chest. No. It's nothing like that. Okay? Nothing like that. So she was naked, and not only was she naked, she also had another risque photo where it looks like she was performing a certain act, certain sexual act to her partner while she was in a G-string with her butt hanging. So Mandy started to push it more and more, and Mandy also showed a picture of another part of her body. And, you know, granted, yeah, it's covered, but it's there. It's visible. You can fucking see it. You know what I'm saying? So it crossed the line for WWE. They do have deals with Mattel. And for the people that want to say they used to have girls photos, yeah, they used to, because the business model was different back then. Now it's something else. It's changed, and we all know it's changed. So let's stop ignoring this fact. Like, wrestling has evolved. The business has evolved. The way they market talent has evolved. That Mattel deal, as a guy who collects action figures, that's right, I collect action figures, I could tell you that these figures, they're amazing, and they're selling like hotcakes because now they're not just doing the current superstars. They're doing all-timers, and they're doing them detailed, and they're doing them really, really good, and it's a very, very lucrative business. Now, from what I understand, what were the numbers that you said? What was the revenue she was generating with this website?
Yeah, I just did some homework here, obviously, before the show, but according to, I think, different websites, it was being reported, she was making over $250,000 a month on the premium content she was having on her specific site. Now it's being reported that since her release on Wednesday morning, she's now increased the subscription price from $25 a month to $40 a month on the site itself. So, I mean, again, when you spread it out over the course of a calendar year, she could easily make $3 million. I don't know what her income was with WWE. She clearly was not going to be making $3 million on her WWE contract without question. So, Pat, you raise a good point. Again, the business has evolved. And again, I think that the whataboutisms that people, I think, are sort of getting out there for the last few days, whether it's Sean Ross Sapp, whether it's Wade Keller, whether it's other writers, the editor from WrestleNomics, I keep forgetting his name, but it'll come to me. And again, just the Twitterverse and Instagramverse and Facebook pages and all these Facebook groups. I think that, again, you know, when people evoke the name of Matt Riddle, you know, we're living in a time, you know, again, 2023 is literally 15 days away. So in 2023, our aspect and our optic, the way we look at people that are suffering from substance abuse, because clearly that's what I think this is with Matt Riddle.
Yes.
I think it's to be looked upon more compassionately. I think our viewpoints have changed about substance abuse. Now, again, we don't know what substance abuse we're talking about here. It's not marijuana, because WWE has changed their policies on marijuana. Could it be harder drugs? Could it be Adderall? Could it be other recreational drugs? We don't know. Again, it's still speculation out there. But the optic, I think, Pat, I think people may have a problem with is one thing is to say, hey, this guy's had multiple wellness violations, and you know what? We're going to send him to rehab. Like anything else, he's a valuable employee. They can make money off Matt Riddle. His merch sells well. I think a lot of people, people are wrong to evoke Matt Riddle's name. Where people might have a little semblance of not credibility, but might say, hey, if this is a guy who's had multiple DUIs where catastrophically he could kill himself or kill someone, and it's been more than one occasion, and he's still employed, I think that's where people get a little sanctimonious, though, Pat. I think evoking Matt Riddle's name is wrong. I think if someone's suffering from substance abuse, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you've had multiple DUIs, I think people's perception of a DUI, they look harshly on someone like that. And if they're still employed after multiple DUIs, I think it's hard for some people not to evoke Jimmy Uso's name because he's still with the company. He's obviously been featured in a storyline for 2 years now where he's the most prominently featured, if not the most successful tag team in history. I think that's where people are going to have probably more of a problem, not to say that they have more standing on it, but I think people are going to say, hey, listen, why are we absolving someone of multiple DUIs? That's wrong. Substance abuse is one thing, multiple DUIs is not. I think that's where people get a little fickle, Pat. I think that's where people, some people are struggling to say, hey, you know what? Okay, let's give Riddle a pass. He's going to rehab. This guy's got behind the wheel of a car multiple times, not just once, but multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a bad look. I think that's where people get a little sensitive and saying, hey, really? You're gonna fire this girl, but keep this guy who could have killed people? I think that's where people get a little fickle, Pat.
Look, I get it. But, I mean, how many of those marks that are criticizing, it's Jimmy Uso, right?
Yes, it's Jimmy, yes.
Is it Jimmy Uso? Yeah, it's Jimmy.
The same people that want to criticize.
Yeah.
The one marriage
to the same,
marriage
the same ones. Okay, so him. People want to criticize him, but like all these people are drunk driving themselves. They just haven't gotten caught yet. The same people that are putting him through the ringer do the same shit. But again, it's all about trying to be fucking right. You know, in this whole wrestling war that these marks think they have with traditional superiors of the business, you know? Like, it's all just some nonsense talking point. And here's the thing, too, that I think a lot of people, you know, maybe can consider as well. Is it wrong that he was drinking and driving? Yes, it is. Responsibly, you're not supposed to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, when we have the privilege to drive a vehicle, you should take it seriously. You shouldn't be intoxicated. You shouldn't be impaired at all behind the wheel. Like, you really shouldn't. It's dangerous. And unfortunately, I think people have made mistakes and have trust that maybe, you know, had a lapse in judgment and thought that they could do something that they were not capable of. The other thing, too, to consider is what's the case? Like, what's the situation like? Is this like he went out and he got bombed and he got shit-faced and, you know, he was, like, crashing into fucking poles and just, like, sideswiping all these vehicles? Or was it a type of situation where he had a couple of beers in a short span of time, started driving, got pulled over for maybe a busted taillight, and then next thing you know, he gets a DUI because he might blow over a certain amount. You know what I'm saying? It's like all these scenarios, it all depends on what the situation is. You know what I'm saying? And obviously, in Jimmy's case, he has a substance issue as well. Okay? And he should be treated for that. And maybe he is being treated for that. Maybe we don't know. Matt Riddle, they have an obligation to help these talents. Because guess what? One of the unfortunate consequences and you know, side effects really of working in the business and working that type of a schedule to be a top star is that you oftentimes might turn to things that you don't want to do to be able to kind of help you relax. And it all depends on the type of person. Obviously, you said WWE doesn't test marijuana anymore. Okay. So these people, they could take edibles, they could smoke, they could do whatever. They could rub it on themselves, and they're able to relax, and that's fine, and that's a good thing. And I think that that's a really, really smart thing, and I give Vince and Triple H, you know, a lot of credit for recognizing, like, hey, this is better than them doing pills. And then maybe some of them will do pills. And then maybe some of them will do booger sugar. And, you know, things happen, but they have an obligation to help this talent. And how about for all the people that want to criticize Matt Riddle, take a look at what that guy's been through, okay? He just got divorced. He can't be with his kids. He's going through a lot personally. And whether you like him or you hate him, he's still a human being. And that shit's still going to fuck with him. And maybe he found, you know, negative ways to deal with that. But either way, that is a separate issue for Jimmy Uso and a separate issue for Mandy Rose. And at the end of the day, people can talk about this and that and fucking cutting Magnum TA's brake wire or something or fucking, you know, whatever you want to go on about, okay? Whatever you want to go on about. But at the end of the day, Mandy Rose violated her contract and she got terminated. It's literally that fucking simple. I don't know what we're getting up in arms about and all this other stuff. She did something. They told her, hey, you can do whatever, but it's in the guidelines of this. It's within the parameters of this because of a separate business dealing. And she knew that, And she still went and did it anyway. And then not to mention the fact that, you know, fans are going to fucking rat. Like, people are going to fucking leak her shit. Doesn't matter if you have a fucking paywall. You know, let's be real here. Like, it doesn't matter. People will figure out a way to get your shit for free. You know? So, at the end of the day, like I said, people can slice it and dice it however they want. She violated a clause in her contract. They probably tried everything they could do. They mediated. They did what they had to do. This was the final strike. So, I don't know what else to say on the matter, Fern, but...
No, I'm... Listen,
you know,
I'm with you.
The vitriol
I'm with you.
And...
No, I'm with you, and I think... You're spot on the legality of it. I think you're spot on the legality of it, where we're talking about the fact that if... You know, listen, if this is explicitly in the... And I'm pretty sure... I think what we've come to learn about WWE as a corporation, as a structure, they're going to do their due diligence about trying to mediate everything before it's too late, before there's really a point of no return. I sincerely doubt that Michael Hickenbottom and Paul Levesque and the powers that be just, you know, woke up Tuesday morning and they decided to rewrite the show, which they did. And they had her drop the title, and then Wednesday morning. I'm sure it was a concerted effort, like anything else, like any other corporation that goes through their due diligence, right? Like HR, right? And listen, we both worked in government. We understand that it's a process. You know, terminating someone like that is probably you go through levels and steps for mediation in the sense, okay, well, here's a write up, here's a deal without pay, whatever the case may be. Again, I'm not a corporate lawyer. But what I know about employment, having worked as long as I have in different sectors, in government, in academia, and everything, like there are levels to discipline and or mediation. So I would conclude with you that, yes, I'm sure they went through their due diligence. And if she was just pushing the envelope and say, they're not going to really fire me. They need me. Who knows? I mean, sometimes people are presumptive that way in their workplace. You know, they overestimate their value. Oh, they're not going to get rid of me. Well, they did. And clearly this is a woman who I've loved since 2015. She has improved infinitely. Clearly she has a value now. We don't know what the non-compete clause, how long that will be. Clearly she's a talent that Impact Wrestling will look at, that AEW will look at. We'll see. But clearly, if she decides to take the rest of 2022 off and take the rest of 2023 off, well, if she's making $250K, which is more than most, you know, U.S. representatives or United States senators, then she could do that for the course of a calendar year and make $3 million. So we'll see. She's recently engaged. Who knows? Maybe she wants to take a break from wrestling. Again, there's a lot of variables here, but I think it's a story that's not going away. And I think people's outrage, I think this will survive the news cycle like anything else. I think people are outraged this week. Many journalists have not been shy about their opinions. I think some people online, as I mentioned, AJ Brooks, has, you know, obviously denounced the firing. We'll see what happens, again, as we close out the year with Amanda Sacramento. But staying along the lines of women in the business.
One last thing before we kind of put a cap on that. But people need to think too, man. Like, again, these people, they're not wind-up toys. Like, they're humans. And they're going through their own shit. Like, it's not just easy peasy. They walk out there, they perform, and that's it. Like, they got a great life. You know, they get into everywhere for free. Like, they're working just like we all are, and they're people, and they have a very, very, very strict schedule, and they beat themselves up for our entertainment. And not only that, but have to deal with their own personal shit and have to, you know, figure out a way to balance all that and still be able to make it a work on time. So, I mean, I think when people, like to your point, when they want to judge Matt Riddle or even when they want to judge Jimmy Uso, you know, these are people who are going through shit, who have addiction problems. Alcohol is a substance. You could get addicted to alcohol and die. Like, let's not forget that. You know, like, I feel like sometimes people just think, oh, it's drugs. Like, no, alcohol can kill you just as quickly. Okay. So, you know, that's part of that. But I really, the thing is with Mandy, for all the people that think like WWE, they just want to get rid of her. Like, no, they don't want to get rid of her. They've invested more money into her than fucking anybody or anything else, any employer that she's ever had in her life. Okay. With, well, probably not herself, you know, because now she's making more money. She's making main event money now. But, you know, again, like WWE doesn't want to invest all that time, all that energy, all that training, yeah. all that money mm-hmm. to make her a star to just let her fucking go. Something had to happen. You know what I'm sure. saying? So sure. either way, mm-hmm. You know, I think personally, I think she has interests outside of the business. And I think that this is a way for her to maybe perhaps do that. We'll see. But either way, man. You know, it is what it is.
Again, folks, let's be clear. Let's not – no one's crying poverty here for Amanda Sacramento. She's clearly going to be doing well and will be doing well even with this website. So we'll see what happens. Staying along the lines about other women in the headlines this week, as we all know, folks, back on May 16th, Naomi and Sasha Banks left WWE during a Raw taping when they were at the time the reigning women's tag team champions, and they haven't been seen in the company since. Multiple news outlets this week reported – that when it comes to one half of the duo, apparently Naomi is still very much on the fence about returning to WWE, as she still explained possibilities as the company waits on her decision. Clearly, she still has a strong connection to WWE because her husband, Jimmy Uso, is one of the top stars in the company, and it would not be surprised to see her return at some point. However, according to sources, the ball seems to be entirely in her court. Naomi was informed that WWE would not be bringing back Sasha Banks due to what she was asking for. Now, apparently, again, in correlation with the story, though, Pat, it seemed like Mercedes was looking to earn what Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch earns. Apparently, whether it be Nick Khan and or Stephanie McMahon, Levesque, and or Paul Levesque, who knows, maybe in a sit-down conference call, Zoom, whatever, it was laid out conclusively to her that she was not going to be earning that money. And clearly, Mercedes decided to take her talents elsewhere. She'll be at Wrestle Kingdom for New Japan Pro Wrestling in January. It seems like Naomi was told that they're not bringing back Mercedes. And it would appear that she is taking her time to figure out what she's going to do. Interesting, though, Pat, again, it seemed like her and Sasha Banks were emphatic in May about they did not like the way they were being used. Obviously, this only emboldened the marks against, at the time, Vince McMahon, because A, the women's tag titles had not been defended on a pay-per-view, on a PLE, excuse me, in months, and they were not being featured. They did not like the creative direction that Vince McMahon at the time was exercising with them. They decided to walk and leave the Raw taping that day. They got a lot of scorn online. I think, well, maybe not scorn so much from the marks online, but clearly they got scorned on television, as we all remember, Corey Graves, and sort of a very, very harsh lecture on the air about them. It seems like Naomi is in no rush to come back. She's clearly not going to come back with Sasha Banks. It seems like Mercedes is done with WWE currently. That could change by the end of 2023. But, again, this emboldened the marks, man. This emboldened the marks in May where – Vince wasn't using her and Sasha Banks, according to them correctly, they felt the need to walk off. Some people applauded it. Some people vilified them. What say you, bro?
Well, I mean, I think she's incredibly talented. I think that she's finding her niche. I think she's getting herself out there in the mainstream. You know, it was really good. She did the Mandalorian. I think she's really, really talented. But it's like, as far as like, does she deserve Becky Charlotte money? No. No, she doesn't. Something slightly less, maybe. But like, I mean, the pandemic WrestleMania, that match, I still think is one of the greatest WrestleMania matches ever. Her and Bianca. And that was kind of like, if you're looking at it now, given what we know, it's kind of like a passing of the torch moment, you know, like kind of there, you know, that she was going to pick up that Sasha Banks spot, you know,
about,
in a sense.
You're talking about last year, right? You're talking about last year, April 2021 in Tampa?
Yeah, yeah. No. The WrestleMania, the pandemic WrestleMania match, remember?
Didn't
the one with Sasha Banks and fucking, and a Bianca. Sasha Banks and Bianca.
Yeah, wasn't that in April?
That was like almost 2 years ago now.
Huh. Wait a minute.
Yeah,
I thought
that was 21? Yeah, it was 21.
Yeah,
it was 21.
Yeah, that was
okay.
I mean, there was a good amount of fans in Tampa. Not a sold house in Tampa, but it was a good amount of fans
in
Tampa, you know. Yeah.
But that was, I feel like that was like the moment, you know, like, and Sasha, from what I understand, is probably not an easy person to work with. Everybody's got their own thing, you know. But, you know, I could also understand where she would want that money, because she's like, hey, I'm on The Mandalorian. I'm on fucking Disney Plus. I don't know what's going to come of this. I could branch out into a series, something else. It could be it. You know what I'm saying? But ultimately, I just think that she feels underappreciated. She feels undervalued. For me, she's kind of like on that Cody Rhodes kind of like arc, where like Cody, you know, went and, you know, went to Japan, did the indies, did all this stuff, you know, and then eventually, like, you know, AEW, and then he went back. So, like, ultimately, I think this is what's going to happen with Sasha. I think she's going to go to New Japan. She's going to have, like, a match with, like, a stardom wrestler or something like that. It's going to be really fucking awesome. And then before long, she's going to pop up in AEW. Maybe next year for Grand Slam, maybe sooner. Who knows? It all depends what the situation is there and what goes on. Do I think that she's ultimately going to make that huge of a dent in any difference? No, because of the structural issues that are present in AEW. I think that she'll spike the rating for sure. I think that she'll sell some merch. I think she'll have some memorable matchups with some of the better talent there that actually knows what the fuck they're doing and will listen to her. But ultimately, I think, yeah, that's what Sasha's going to do. She's going to leave. She's going to do whatever. Hell, she might even quit wrestling altogether for all we know, because we don't know how big her role is going to be in this next season of Mandalorian, which is what? It's coming out in March? So, I mean, like, you know.
Correct, yes, correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, we don't, you know, it's going to be, we don't know what's going to come of this. She could probably get her own series with the other Mandalorians. Who knows? Who knows? At the rate that they're giving out series on fucking Disney Plus, I wouldn't be surprised, okay? So she might be done with wrestling by then. Who knows? But that's personally what I think. Naomi really doesn't have to do much, man. Naomi could go back to wrestling if she wanted to. She'd be good there, but she could do movies, man. She's beautiful, you know? And she could do movies. She could do whatever, and she'll be fine. So, you know, we'll see what happens with all of that, but maybe she just wants to take time. I mean, you know, maybe she's been on the road for too long, and it's a lot to deal with. You know, who knows? But Mercedes, Varnado, or whoever.
Listen, without a doubt, I mean, I think Naomi's in a good position right now. She doesn't have to rush back. But I, according to multiple sources, I mean, she was told emphatically, like, yeah, you want to come back, that's great, but you're not coming back to have a tag team with Mercedes because she's not going to be retained. And, you know, it says a lot, though, man, about the conversations I think we have off the air, and I think in general when we talk about workplace stuff, I mean, you know, you can't begrudge Mercedes for believing what her value is and asking of it. Now, again, WWE as an employer has the right to either say, well, we don't think you're worth this dollar amount. We want you to come back at what you are presently making. And if Mercedes doesn't feel that's up to her value, then okay, that's fine. I mean, again, folks, that's the workplace, ladies and gentlemen. Again, you don't need a PhD in economics to understand this. But I think it also lends itself to, I think now more than ever, though, Pat, I think in recent years, the internet and especially social media, I think has really, I think, exacerbated this forum where people that do this for a living feel the need to air their grievances online, that they're not making enough or whatever. I mean, again, you know, listen, we're way past the days of kayfabe. We're decades past the days of kayfabe, okay? So the idea that conversations like this or opinions were we never knew this during the Attitude Era. We never knew this during the 80s or even before, the territory days. This was never, ever leaked. I mean, social media has made this now a practice where if someone doesn't feel they're being valued, they're going to take to social media and air their grievances. And I think that to some extent, Mercedes is doing that. I think Mercedes is being very calculated. Listen, it's no coincidence. You're signing with New Japan. You're making it a point to make sure that New Japan will publish that you're going to be making X amount of money, perhaps the highest amount of money that any star has made in recent years, right? Where even that will trigger other stars who supposedly were making money too in that promotion. The bottom line is I think that Naomi's in a really good position right now to either A, not return to wrestling, B, it's not like the household is suffering, right, based on what her husband is earning, not just in salary but in merch, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, whatever Jimmy's making right now, he could probably just live off the principal and not even touch the interest. Okay, but I think that Naomi's an interesting position because Naomi's not as good of a name as Sasha is. I hate to break it to people. She's improved infinitely. She's become a lot better. If everybody remembers 5 years ago during that WrestleMania in Orlando in her hometown when she won the SmackDown Women's title, man, that was a great moment because what do we know her as? One of the Funkadactyls back in the day with Funkathoris, and, you know, to see how far she's come is amazing. She still was a lesser name in that tag team. And let's be honest, I'm not smearing anybody. Those are the facts. She was a lesser name there. Can she come back as a single star and maybe excel? We'll find out. We'll see. But if I were her, I wouldn't be in a rush either. There's no need for her to come back.
No, not at all. I think that she's, you know, she's in a good position. She could just chill out. She could kind of figure out what she's going to do. You know, we don't know how things are going to look. We don't know if some of those people that they re-signed are going to pan out or not, you know. And there's a lot on the table, man. So give it some time. You know, in the meantime, she can make money other ways. You know, she could be in movies. She could do all different types of stuff. Like, I don't think it's a problem. And, you know, the Usos, like right now, they're enjoying this run, you know, because it's probably going to be over pretty soon. So they gotta maximize everything that they have, you know, right now, because you don't know what's going to happen, you know, especially with Roman, you know, so that's the big thing. But, she's in a good spot. And I think Mercedes is in a great spot. I think Mercedes is going to go to Japan. She's going to be a female top draw for New Japan, which is very, very different. Like, that's some, you know.
Yeah.
She's going to be like a trailblazer, man. Like, that's pretty cool, you know. Because now you're going to tell people, hey, women could draw in New Japan, too. So, you know, and she's, I mean, outside of Okada and maybe other people, she's going to be the biggest global star there. And it will generate a lot of attention for her appearance in any future matches that we might see. So, you know, it might not even be at New Japan. They might do it at Stardom. They might be using the Tokyo Dome to promote it. So who knows? But I felt like I sounded like Meltzer. They're like, well, you know, I mean, I think they're promoting it, you know, at the Tokyo Dome. I mean, you know, that's the idea. You know, they want to get the absolute best show possible. You know. I feel like I sounded like Meltzer.
You know, you should record an audio and send it to him on Twitter. I mean, I can't because he's blocked me, but you should try that though, Pat. But. Interesting to see what's going to happen, obviously, with these female stars in the next few weeks and certainly going into 2023. Let's switch gears here. Other things in the headlines this week. Apparently, Sean Waltman took to the internet to address some people, I mean, making this really weird comparison this past week on Dynamite, where Action Andretti and his shocking win over Chris Jericho was being compared to his win over Razor Ramon in 1993. Sean Waltman said, quote, I just got the shit beat out of me by Scott. Before he charged the corner, I moved and hit the moonsault body block. I got zero offense in before that. Chris had a competitive match with Andretti before putting him over. I'm glad Sean Waltman spoke out because I think that marks were so quick to say, well, my God, this is the biggest upset since 1-2-3 Kid defeated Razor Ramon on Raw at the Manhattan Center. Back in 1993, and, you know, shortly after Razor Ramon had just won, I think maybe the week after WrestleMania 9, where he defeated WWE Hall of Famer Bob Backlund, you know, good for Sean Waltman. I think marks are really quick to sort of bring up history and say, well, let's compare this win to that. Again, for anyone who does their homework, it seems like AEW management, it seems like Chris Jericho, who has an enormous amount of influence backstage, apparently have been looking at Action Andretti for months. So good for Sean Waltman standing up and kind of maybe calming everybody down and saying, oh, relax. Like, if you watch the match on Wednesday, he's right. It was a competitive match. Like Andretti And Jericho had, for what it's worth, a pretty competitive match. That's not what happened, folks, with Sean Waltman and Scott Hall. Scott Hall beat the piss out of this guy for like 5-6 minutes until he got that move in. So I think people need to kind of, A, as a history teacher, I always get ruffled when people don't know their history correctly, and B, are trying to make comparisons that aren't really valid. So I'm with Sean Waltman on this one, dude.
Absolutely. The way they booked it was like a squash until he got the move off and got the pin. You know, the other one was a competitive matchup. And I mean, again, bro, you're going to get all these marks that are going to write about it, all the mark reporters and the journalists and the Dave Meltzers of the world. And, you know, they're going to talk about, oh, you know, Chris Jericho and Mario Andretti and all this other stuff. And it's just like, you know, okay, like you watch the match, you see it. Okay, Jericho put over a young kid. That's nothing like what Razor and fucking 1-2-3 Kid did. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. And the Razor and 1-2-3 Kid match, like it was genius. Because again, if you're watching it, like when it happened, it was a huge shock. It was a huge fucking shock. So, you know, when people saw it, they were like, oh shit. And the way the match was booked, it was looking like a complete squash. It was looking like Hall was just going to beat him up like some other J-Bro, and that was it. And then he hit the moonsault, and that was that. I mean, it was brilliant. It's brilliant. People talk about it. People try to emulate it. That's how great it was, okay? But this is nothing close to it. The kid has a good look, Andretti. You know, there's something maybe that you can work with there. But again, nobody's ever heard this kid cut a promo. Nobody's ever heard this kid do anything. You've just seen him wrestle. And because Chris Jericho wanted to put him over, now all of a sudden he's the second coming of Hook. What happened to Hook? Has anybody heard from Hook?
Apparently it looks like Hook might be joining forces with Jungle Boy after he came to the aid of Jungle Boy this week on Dynamite. Again, that's just a rumor, or at least what they were teasing on television this week, though, bro.
I mean, Hook should have won the FTW World Heavyweight Garbage Wrestling fucking Deathmatch Championship, AEW Deathmatch Championship by now. He should have been like, fucking at least like 14 reigns in by now, okay? The way everybody was talking about him, Hook was changing the fucking business. You know, he was like fucking modern-day Shawn Michaels. I mean, like, wow. What happened to Hook? What happened to Wardlow? Anybody seen Wardlow? Like, Wardlow doing big things, like things that matter, that, like, the fans are actually into? Not, like, bullshit feuds? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know. But,
Crazy. No, definitely crazy.
Mario Andretti. Good for Mario Andretti. Chris Jericho.
And
bro, Chris Jericho invented wrestling.
I know. Well, it's interesting, though, that fans, I think, are kind of surprised that Jericho put him over on television. But, I mean, again, it just seems like at this stage of his career, Jericho should be putting more people over on television. But, again, if he's making $5 million.
You don't say.
And has enormous creative control, well, it seems like Tony Khan continues to acquiesce to him. Maybe in this case he did. I don't know. You're absolutely correct. We haven't seen Action Andretti cut a promo yet. We haven't seen him do a series of matches with other workers, with guys that, you know, are not over the hill like Chris Jericho. You know, give me a match with Bryan Danielson. I mean, Bryan Danielson can have a great match with a broomstick, as you've always said on the show. You know, let's see what he does with other talent, guys that are more talented than him and that he can learn from in the ring and have a good match. You know, the barometer of beating Chris Jericho, that's not saying a lot. If this was like 2007 Chris Jericho, that's a different conversation. That's not. It's 2023 Chris Jericho. So I think people need to calm down. Fine. Give the kid a win on television. Let's see what happens. But, you know, to make this guy the second coming of Sean Waltman, that remains to be seen. Sean Waltman's a Hall of Famer, a guy who put a lot of time into the business, and certainly a guy who – you know, again, comparing this win to 1993 is asinine to me. But again, marks and marked journalists online you know, can't help themselves when it comes to this. You know, Pat.
I mean, sorry to cut you off real quick there, but I just wanted to kind of say a little bit more about this. But like, I wouldn't have a problem with all this hype, with all this stuff, if this was like some dude that they had been doing stuff with on TV. But this guy's only wrestled on YouTube, okay? Or he had like a squash match on TV once. There's no character work. We know fucking nothing about him. We haven't seen a video package. Like, kid hasn't even cut a promo. But oh my
you're
God,
not gonna see,
this
you're
dude's
not gonna
change
see a video
the business.
Package. You're not gonna see a video package. It's AEW. Come on, man.
But I wouldn't have a problem if people were this excited if there was actually going to be some kind of follow-up, something interesting. Because even for people like Jungle Boy, you know, like he's just there. He's just fucking there. He should be bigger than what he is. Hook should be bigger than what he is. Wardlow should be bigger than what he is. All these people should be bigger than what they are. And I just think that this guy is another hype machine wrestler, you know, AEW fan hype machine wrestler that is going to be fucking nothing. That's going to be an afterthought in maybe like 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying?
The
same old song and dance with them, you know?
And that'd be funny because, again, when you look at Chris Jericho's record in AEW, to see another L when he hasn't taken an L in so long is kind of, you would think it's a bigger deal, but again, remains to be seen. We'll see what Tony Khan does with this booking. Pat, obviously this week, another big story, certainly on Tuesday night on Vice, was the premiere of The Nine Lives of Vince McMahon. Now, we'll get to another topic on Vince McMahon later, but this documentary was interesting because for those of us that, you know, are fascinated with the life of Vince McMahon and certainly his upbringing, he's a very unique story. Clearly, you know, from his upbringing, what he went through with his mother, with his stepdad, the abuse he's talked about, certainly in exclusive interviews. You know, I have to say, though, it was disappointing for me to watch this because, okay, I get it. The first hour, and it aired this past Tuesday from 9 p.m. to 11. There wasn't a lot on TV per se. There was some good, well, it was a good NBA doubleheader, a couple other shows as well. You had good hockey and everything else. But the first hour was basically a mashup of the old, really the previous three seasons of Dark Side of the Ring. So anytime that Vince was mentioned, whether it was the Montreal Screwjob, whether it was the steroid trials, whether it was the Benoit incident, the Owen Hart thing. I mean, if you had not watched the Dark Side of the Ring in recent months or years, you know, you got a little bit of a refresher, right? So people that maybe had forgot how mad they were at Vince because of what happened with Owen, that anger resurrected itself. The PR disaster that was the Benoit situation, whether it was the Montreal Screwjob, what happened with Bret Hart and him. I mean, yeah, the first hour was mashups and okay, you know, maybe for your recollection purposes, it served its purpose. The second hour was interesting. The second hour, obviously you had, you know, people like Vince Russo opining. You had Brian Alvarez, Dave Meltzer, the editor of WrestleNomics, Wade Keller, the editor of Pro Wrestling Torch. I think people like Chris Jericho and others had been approached to opine on this documentary. They declined. So did Vince, no surprise. It was weird, man, to watch it because the chronology was pretty much starting up when, you know, when he was a teenager, going to military school, everything else, you know, buying the company from his father, taking out competitors in the territories and all that. So then kind of highlighting like the multiple indiscretions Vince has had from what happened with, you know, obviously the legal case that I just mentioned to sexual harassment things going on in 2006, the recent, obviously the incidents that were documented earlier this year, which caused Vince to step down as CEO. Again, it wasn't the best documentary per se. Again, the mashups are fine. If you didn't know about them, or the history, okay. That's, again, as a history teacher, I love to read about history. The second hour just seemed like people who you can tell don't like Vince McMahon, maybe excluding Vince Russo. Vince wasn't as harsh on Vince as the others were, but it just seemed like the underlying story, the morale of the story was, hey, Vince really does have nine lives. He's made of Teflon, whether it was a steroid trial, whether it's this or that. It seemed like the underlying message was, hey, Vince has money. He's throwing money at a problem, whether it's the Jimmy Snuka incident also they featured. It just seems like whatever trouble Vince gets himself into, he can save himself because of money. And that was kind of like an underlying tone there. That's what I got out of the 2 hours, Pat. I know you didn't watch it. You didn't care to. But for our audience, I think I gave the best synopsis possible.
I mean, you know, it's clear today what this stuff is. This is indoctrination, okay? This is indoctrinating a new generation of marks, a younger generation of marks that didn't know what this stuff is, all right? This is the Dave Meltzers of the world grooming a young fan base to hate Vince McMahon. That's basically what this is. Because
Pat, by the way, I'll let you finish, though, but just a couple of numbers for our audience. It drew 95,000 viewers. Apparently, it ranked 107th on cable that night. It brought in significantly lower numbers than the channel's popular Dark Side of the Ring series, and even didn't do as well as the Dark Side of the Territories. Really bad numbers on a Tuesday night where this wasn't as advertised, but you would think there'd be some interest in it. A really low number, Pat. I'm sorry. I'll let you finish.
Yeah, but what about the demo? What about the demo?
Demo was 0.04 in the key 18 to 49 demographic. Again, 95,000 viewers. Not a good number. Now, again, they didn't advertise it the way they advertised Dark Side of the Ring because Vice does a good job with that. And it's been a good show. I know you don't like it. We'll talk about that in a minute. But not a good rating. I'll continue. I know you were on a point.
No. Basically, what I was going to say was just, you know, this is what it is. It's some sort of indoctrination to, like, you know, younger fans to fucking hate Vince. This is stuff that, like, Dave Meltzer's putting out there, you know, like, all these people that produce it, they all hate Vince. They all want to see – there is an obsession with wrestling fans to see Vince go down. It's insane. It's insane. It's insane. It's sick, man. It's honestly sick. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, if it wasn't for Vince, like, Dave Meltzer really wouldn't be as popular as he was. You know? He was a resource for the boys, but he got to hang out backstage. He got to get to know people. You know, he got to be around a lot of shit, you know? And all because Vince McMahon allowed it. All because Vince McMahon let him be there. And for whatever reason, you know, as Jim Cornette's pretty much summed up, because he's a guy that's known him forever and, you know, was once a friend of his and respected him, you know, Dave Meltzer wants to sit with the cool kids. That's basically what it is. He wants to sit with the cool kids. And right now, for whatever reason, maybe he's huffing paint, I don't know, he thinks that the cool kids are the AEW fans and those marks. And all he does is just put shit out to appease them, to make them pay for whatever it is that they pay for to subscribe to his page and to hear him and his fucking cronies, minus Tom Lawler and Lance Storm, who I respect the both of them, to listen to him and his cronies go on and on about how WWE is the worst thing in the world, AEW is the best thing in the world, and it's only a matter of time before the empire crumbles and Vince McMahon needs to go to jail. Like, it's just too much what he's gotten away with. And again, they provided a refresher course to young marks that right now are about 13 or 14 years old that didn't know about the steroid trial, that didn't know anything, but they just knew that whoever their uncle was, who was probably a mark too, you know, they know that their uncle hated Vince McMahon and hates Vince McMahon and he screwed Bret Hart and all this other stuff. So now the kid's growing up thinking Vince McMahon's the worst fucking guy in the world. Right? But he doesn't know why. He just, because, you know, oh, yeah, he did that to Bret Hart. Okay, fine. They're basically providing a refresher course on why to hate Vince McMahon to a younger demographic. That's basically what they're doing.
No, Pat, well said there. I think also, too, I think there's a dynamic here, I think, that separates you and me in this conversation. I think that, again, we both look at, and I love Dark Side of the Ring. Whenever it's on marathons, when I'm at home in my home, and you've been to my house, so you know the structure of my house. When I'm in my home office doing work, I have the TV there in the background. Whenever there's a marathon on Vice, hey, I'm watching it. But I think our perspectives are a little bit different, though, because I know we've talked off the air about it. As a fan and as a mark, I enjoy watching Dark Side of the Ring. Maybe not every episode, because some kind of bother me to watch. Like, I can't watch the Owen one without getting a little misty or, like, uncomfortable. Or the Benoit stuff, you know, whatever. You know, but for you, as again, as having been a worker, I think that we look at Vice differently as a channel. I mean, I watch Vice News a few times a week because I do like what they publish news-wise. I don't like the left, you know, the left-wing slant that they have for news, but I like watching because I like to watch everything. But when it comes to Dark Side of the Ring, like, I enjoy it because as a fan, A, I lived through some of the stuff watching it, but now I know the backstory. You as a worker, I know you're really, really down on Vice for doing this show.
Well, you know, to be quite honest, it's not so much that, like, I'm down on it. It's just that I see, like, what the consequences are. You know what I'm saying? Like, how the shit it stirs within the business. You know what I'm saying? How it takes people, it costs people their jobs and their livelihood and, like, all this stuff. How it creates heat with people that was either buried or just whatever. Like, they worked past it. It opened up a lot of old wounds, new wounds. And for whatever reason, I honestly didn't care to see it because most of the tragic stuff, I mean, I've lived it. I've seen it. I remember it. I read books on it, you know, like, I remember it differently, and that's the way I want to remember it. I don't need to fucking see it now. I don't need to remember any of that. Like Brian Pillman. I don't need to remember Brian Pillman dying. I need to remember Dynamite Kid being a not-so-good person. I don't need to remember, you know, any of that stuff. I don't need to remember Owen Hart dying. I don't need to remember Chris Benoit. That shit sucked. I remember that. It was incredibly disappointing and heartbreaking, you know? Owen Hart passing away the way he did. Okay, great. We understand. It was an accident that went fucking wrong. Well, what was he doing up there? What are you doing up there? What are you doing fucking anywhere? You know what I'm saying? Like, you got stuff to do. He had a job to do. Unfortunately, that happened, you know? But for me, I care not to revisit these things. I've already seen it. I've already known about it. You know, for me, again, this is more designed for the young marks. It's designed to take these young marks to boil up all the piss and vinegar they got. And hey, you know, Vince McMahon, because most of the stuff's on WWE, most of this, and they have never made Vince look good at all on any of those programs at all. Meanwhile, Vince is fucking employed, promoted, and made superstars out of fucking everybody in the business. All the little fucking toys he got. And some of you like to stick up your ass or something or stick up somebody else's ass. All the T-shirts you got, all the nonsense you got, everything you ever got when you were a kid from wrestling is because of fucking Vince. You never hear people
belts.
Say that stuff.
I mean, think about it. Like, people that walk
all the
around,
belts. Oh,
like,
God, belts. The belt mean, people. Yeah.
Yeah, like, think about it. Think about it. When we go to meet and greets that we've gone to, I mean, we haven't gone to a lot of them together, but I mean, I know I go to a lot of them with my cousin, friends of mine. I mean, think about the amount of people that grew up, you know, seeing title belts and made them out of cardboard or whatever, and now you can buy one for, again, and I have to say, I think you'll be proud of me when I tell you this. I have yet to succumb to the urge to put down $500. I have not yet bought a replica title belt. If I haven't yet by this kind of, by this stage of my life and my age, I'm probably not going to. So I think at least be proud of me on that one, bro.
Look, man, I don't have a problem with people buying the belts. I don't care. You want to buy a belt, pose it in your room, be a fucking weirdo by yourself with it, great. That's fucking awesome. Fucking A, knock yourself up. But, like, if you want to go and walk around at fucking conventions with them and walk around at wrestling shows with them, like, bro, that's not even a recognized championship. You're not defending that tonight. Like, stop, okay? Stop. Don't even walk around like that. You know, again, it's like I could understand if maybe perhaps they're not mentally well or something, or, you know, if they're
like
little
a lot
kids.
Of marks.
Okay,
fine. A lot of marks can be not mentally well, you know.
pretty much. But, you know, like I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with, like, all right, you know, a little kid, or maybe somebody else, like, you know, a developmentally disabled person or something, or whatever.
Sure.
But like these fucking marks. Walking around with these fucking beer guts, with these fucking XXL shirts, with fucking no muscles, You know what I'm saying? With fucking mustard stains all over the pants. You know, looking like fucking 15 pounds of shit in a 10-pound bag, walking around with a title. You're not defending that. You're not a fucking champion. Get the fuck out of here, you fucking Mark. Go be a weirdo with it in your room. Nobody wants to see this. All right? But that's just me. That's just me. That's all I'm saying. You want to be a weirdo?
No, but
be a weirdo in your room. Be a weirdo in your room. You know what I'm saying?
No, but Pat, really, again, I think the show itself, I think the show lends itself to the reality that, depending on your life experience and your and how you view the business, I think that you either find the show informative, which I do. I find it informative. Again, I lived through a lot of this stuff not knowing the backstory. But to your point, it can be detrimental because what it's done, it has emboldened literally a new generation of fans to believe that they know more about the business than they really do. It's emboldened them to be overly critical online, whether it's starting a YouTube page, a podcast, right, or anything. I think it has emboldened people where that can be a good thing, but I think it also has its negatives. And I think that, you know, you look at a documentary like this, it's a one-time deal. I would be shocked if Vice is going to put any more money into this to have any more stuff about Vince McMahon for now because of the low rating. Again, Dark Side of the Ring, hook or crook, sink or swim, it has served its purpose. It's done great traffic for Vice. It's put Vice, let's be honest, it has put Vice on the map because before Dark Side of the Ring, it was a channel that wasn't, A, easy to find on your cable system, and B, wasn't generating a lot of attention. Again, I'm not trying to get political here. If you watch Vice News, there's a slant to Vice News. So unless you like that, you're not openly going to look for Vice on your cable or streaming. But again, for those of us that have streaming instead of traditional analog cable, guess what? Vice is a channel you look at. Whether it's Dark Side of the Ring, whether it's Dark Side of the 90s, whether it's Betraying the Badge, that series on exposing corrupt law enforcement. I mean, Vice has grown. But I think this is maybe a lesson learned where tapping into this well about Vince probably is not going to work. It didn't work on Tuesday. And even despite the new footage, I don't think it's something that they should explore again. We're going to learn new stuff about Vince soon enough, which we'll cover shortly in moments, but it just seems like this was not the enterprise I think Vice was hoping for, and I think maybe this is a lesson learned from them.
Yeah, I think so too, man. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, again, it's like, look at the audience that they're drawing, dude. You know, it's a fucking Mark audience. It's a Mark audience, dude. You know, they're not going to draw any ratings. They have a Mark wrestling product that they barely draw ratings for. You think that they're going to waste their time to do this? Plus, yeah, to your point, there's a lot of people that don't have Vice. I get that stuff. But I don't know, dude. It's just all fucking nonsense, honestly. It's just all nonsense. And again, it's a way to bury Vince to a young generation and for Meltzer and for these guys to continue to make money because they got to hold on to what they got. That Sean Ross Sapp, all these guys, they all got to hold on to what they got, dude. Because how long before AEW goes under? And then what? They go back to covering New Japan and the Indies? You know, come on.
Yeah, no.
They don't
want to
do that.
No question there. And it's funny, you know, obviously we can transition to really the numbers here. And we'll start – normally I start with Raw and Frank. We'll start with AEW this week. And it seemed that the recent episode of Dynamite did relatively well this week. Obviously the main event with MJF defending the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, along with putting on the line the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Drew, if I'm looking at the numbers here correctly, drew a pretty good number. Obviously it was an increase for them from previous weeks where they had really been struggling though. And AEW pulled in 950,000 viewers this week, which was up 13% from last week's. And it's been the highest audience total, Pat, since October 26th. Dynamite only trailed two games that were on ESPN that night that went head-to-head with the show. It drew an early rating. Certainly, when you look at the AEW numbers here, I'll just draw them up here for our audience tonight. Certainly, coming up December 7th, 840,000 November 30th, 870,000 November 23rd, the night before Thanksgiving, 880,000 November 16th, 818,000 November 9th, 930,000 November 2nd, 911,000 October 26th, again, the highest rating since then, 997,000, basically a million. But the last time it drew a million was October the 5th at 1.038. So a bit of a boost this week for AEW, but again, you had a, I mean, you had a clusterfuck of stuff. Now, again, I wasn't home to watch it. I was hosting my toy drive, but I did watch the replay on Thursday. Yeah, good match with Ricky Starks and MJF, but you had Double J and Jay Lethal jump the AEW Tag Team Champions. You had Jeff Jarrett hit Max Caster with a guitar. You had Hook come out and save Jungle Boy. You had just, it just seemed like a clusterfuck. You know, again, under a million once again. And I talked about this with you over the summer. You know, in 2021, AEW produced 12 weeks out of the 52 with million viewers or more. And during the summer, I think there were up to seven. And we said to ourselves, oh, okay, it's the summer. You know, all right, well, they still have the other half of the year to go. You know, they still have All Out come out in September on Labor Day weekend. They're going to have Grand Slam here in the New York City area in Queens on that Wednesday. Obviously, other themed Dynamites. Dude, they're not going to reach a million. They're not going to have over at least tie what happened in 2021 with, you know, of the 52 weeks. I think they might just crack at 9 weeks this year, where they drew over a million. It's not, these are not good numbers. And again, for Tony Khan that is trying to, you know, get TNT to renew a contract or get more money out of TNT, this isn't a good look, man.
Obviously not. I think, you know, I mean, try and sell it to me. You know what I'm saying? Try and sell it to me. Like, if you're Tony Khan and I'm freaking TNT, it's like, hey, here's this product that, like, kind of did good at the beginning, and then we got this big star, and we got our highest rating. We never came anywhere near it again, and we chose, like, these three acrobats and this washed-up dude who looks like a chewed-up piece of gum with hair on it, you know, over this star and other stars that could have helped make this company bigger. And, you know, like, come on, man. Like, it's just, I don't know, dude. It's a hard sell for me. If I'm TNT, if I'm any one of those companies that they're going to be dealing with, like, it's hard. If Tony Khan should maybe try and find, I mean, he's going to do Honor Club again, but he needs to figure out a way for him to stream Ring of Honor and stream AEW's old stuff, and then maybe do a couple of his own shows on there. But, dude, it doesn't look good for them. It just doesn't look good for them. And I've been saying it for a while. And, you know, they might get a couple of shots in the arm here and there. But I just think that, I mean, like MJF, like we said, you know, MJF, very talented guy, you know, really good, like, at what he does. Good in every facet of working. But what are we going to see from MJF now that we didn't see from him before? You know what I'm saying? Where is this character going to go that he hasn't already been before? That's the real question. Because MJF is a good character. He could talk a good line of shit. But, like, we need to see that next step from him. That next step from him in the character. I think keeping him a babyface was, you know, what needed to happen. But, unfortunately, I guess it didn't work out that way. And, you know, again, it's like MJF's not enough. Moxley, we've already seen it from Jericho. He's not going to do it. They do well. They do a million when they promote matches, that's for sure. But I don't know, man. Outside of people just going there for a payday now, what's the incentive to join? You're not working with a creative genius. Yeah, okay, maybe he'll go and pay for that for your indie song. But, like, the only incentive to go work in AEW is money. Sasha's going to get that money that WWE didn't want to give her in AEW. Sure. But is she going to be doing what she was doing in WWE? No. She's not.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And absolutely not. Again, and it's an indictment. It's an indictment from the reality that Tony Khan doesn't know what he's doing creatively. And you can have good minds backstage. You can have Jerry Lynn. You can, I mean, again, you might laugh at me when I say this, you know, people that are seasoned in the business, again, they may not be doing good things creatively, but you have a wealth of knowledge backstage. You're just not utilizing it. And it shows with these ratings, the way he's booking pay-per-views, whether it was last week's Ring of Honor, or even the way he's booking Dynamite. Staying on ratings here, obviously looking at Raw, a low number, man. 1.47, down 64,000 from the previous week. Not a great Monday night game. It was the Patriots at the Cardinals. Again, for 30 years, we know that WWF/WWE was always going to have Monday Night Football as a competitor. That's not a surprise. Some low numbers here lately, though, because when we saw over the summer. So this past Monday, we saw 1.47. December 5th was 1.536. November 28th was 1.668. The week of Thanksgiving, 1.646. November 14th, 1.648. November 7th, 1.593. On Halloween itself, 1.5 million. Going back to October, 1.6. Highest number they had, though, really was the Raw right after Clash of the Castle, 2.094. The Raw before that was 2.11. August 22nd, 2.01. And then it was back on August 15th, 1.9. It has not cracked 2 million, though, since really Labor Day. Again, as we mentioned, you know, the NFL has a big thing to do with that. Obviously, it's September. The fall TV shows really resume. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, whether it's The Voice on NBC on Monday nights, whether it's CSI on CBS, whether it's The Bachelor on Monday nights. Also, again, you know, I like watching The Bachelor, but 30 hot chicks, you know, trying to win a guy's attention. This is stuff they've all been used to. It's still a solid rating, but it's been going down a little bit. I'm sure this will change once the NFL season's over. But good television, though. It's not like Raw's been bad, though. Raw's been good. The numbers don't always reflect that, I think.
Look, we're gearing towards the Rumble. We're a month out, kind of. It's going to take time. It's not always going to be great, but it's just the ride to get there. Triple H, you know, he's doing the best he can right now. I think that, you know, not everything's really working out. But, you know, he's got the knowledge. I'm gonna reserve any judgment. I'm just going to kind of see what happens. Could it be better? Yeah, it could be better. But I think as long as he thinks that way, and I think that he sticks to what he has to do, maybe after WrestleMania, we might start to see things that are more in his image. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, in terms of things in his image, the SmackDown ratings clearly are better. They've been very good for a while. Pat, here's some numbers last week. December 9th, 2.306. On December 2nd, a low of 902,000. Again, that was on FS1. You had a big college bowl game that Friday, obviously, which is why it was moved from Fox. November 25th, 2.166. Obviously, literally on Black Friday, right after Thanksgiving. On November 18th, 2.232. November 11th, 2.26. November 4th, 2.1. October 28th, again, the baseball playoffs, the World Series. Obviously, it was moved to FS1 once again, 835,000. It's been 2.5, 2.2, 2.3. It's fluctuated in that area. Solid numbers for SmackDown. No surprise there on Fox.
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, you know, they're always going to generate a good number on Fox. You know, the big stars are on that program, the presentation, the advertising, everything. You know, it's always going to be really good. It's definitely the best produced show. I guess it's really just the TV production. I don't know what it is, but mm-hmm. they make it feel bigger. You know what I mean? They make it feel a lot bigger. I'm not surprised at that at all. Even the low rating, you know, it happens. You know, it's not really the end of the world. Maybe Tony Khan will say, oh, well, you know, I got a higher rating than SmackDown. Oh, well, he did win the Friday Night War, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Khan did win the Friday Night War.
That's such nonsense. But, I mean, again, not a surprise there. But, again, SmackDown's going to keep doing good numbers. It's as simple as that, though, man. I don't think it's, something to worry about. Obviously, I know coming up now, the NFL season will be coming to an end, you know, and college football will be coming to an end. Any Friday night games or anything like that obviously won't interfere. And, you know, SmackDown will resume what it was doing. Good numbers. Again, as we approach Royal Rumble season, the road to WrestleMania, that's a big deal, obviously. We're going to find out what happens with the Bloodline, what happens with Sami Zayn, what happens with Gunther defending the Intercontinental title, what happens with the women's tag titles. Again, SmackDown, as you said perfectly, well-produced, arguably the best well-produced show of anything WWE puts on every week. Again, no disrespect to Raw, but I think obviously because of Fox and everything else, I think SmackDown continues to lead the pack. Pat, our main event topic this week, certainly the latest on Vince McMahon, and, you know, with the documentary that came out on Tuesday on Vice TV, it certainly prompted some speculation. The Wall Street Journal this week reporting that Vince McMahon apparently is intimating that he's interested in coming back. And again, I don't want to make this out to be a business course here. I'm not a business professor, but for our audience, for our very intelligent audience, I think they'll certainly appreciate the grasp of this. But here's the reality about what's going on. Again, there's been a lot of whispers and rumors about Vince wanting to come back. I think a lot of fans, including myself, would say openly, I don't think we need Vince McMahon right now. I think it's fine that Vince is not here. I like what Paul Levesque has been doing. Clearly, the business side of the company with Nick Khan and Stephanie Levesque, I think, are doing well. They're very profitable. They're going to be going to India next month for a one-day show. They're clearly, you know, again, their social media traffic is amazing. They're just selling out buildings. Again, the business model is there. You know, as you've said to me before, Paul Levesque and Stephanie McMahon and Nick Khan inherited a good business model. But it seems that what the Wall Street Journal reported this week was, and it goes like this, I think, I just came across a very interesting column this week, and I'll read you some excerpts here, which I think really put into perspective the complexities of people saying, oh, well, can Vince really come back? Here's a reality as to why I feel Vince won't come back. And it goes like this. A lot of people are acting like Vince McMahon can just walk back into power in the WWE. These people are showing that they really don't understand how public corporations work. And again, folks at home listening, I'm not trying to be sanctimonious or condescending here, but I think these are some important facts here when it comes to corporate America. There are two ways, though. The extremely unlikely, next to impossible scenario is that the board votes to reinstate Vince McMahon. Most of the board wanted Vince gone due to what happened with the allegations that surfaced really over the summer, with the Wall Street Journal actually saying that members of the board secretly did not like the sex stuff in the first place. Option two is the nuclear option. This is where Vince McMahon can simply vote to replace the board entirely. He does have the majority of the stocks with the shares in the company. So that's the nuclear option. And he could override the board completely. This could be, though, perceived as a disaster, though, Pat. Most, if not all, the major investors would exit the company as they do have representatives on the board. In addition, by doing so, he'd be effectively firing Paul Levesque, Stephanie McMahon, and Nick Khan from their positions in a single shot. It would take the WWE stock, costing Vince untold millions. Now, the WWE stock, for the record, folks, has improved since Vince McMahon stepped down. I'm happy about that because the stock is now $63 a share in these last few months, as opposed to in the mid-40s to when Vince was still empowered over the summer. So as a shareholder, I'm ecstatic. Now, again, let's go back to the column. It would essentially run the risk of burning WWE to the ground should Vince take this. A company can make money and go into bankruptcy because of a stock collapse, and such an action by Vince could effectively run the risk of that. It would also open the door to a full-fledged SEC investigation because if Vince took the nuclear option here and appointed himself chairman of the hand-picked board, he would be ignoring rules and ethics agreed to by with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And that might be a killer bee's nest right where, guess what, maybe he doesn't want the federal government poking around or looking around into what this decision could prove. So really the short of it, bro, is that while Vince apparently, whether it's his attorneys, however this leaked, if he'd like to come back, the reality is he's not going to come back. Based on the way this corporate structure is set up, Vince isn't going to risk this. And whether or not more allegations come out, it seemed like money that he paid to, I guess, the original WWE referee back from the mid-80s, other money, whatever the case may be, it just seems like Paul Levesque, Stephanie, and Nick have a model in place. It seems like from a corporate perspective, Vince can't come back. And obviously that brings joy to a lot of fans. I'll explain my joy in a minute. But let's just sort of dissect real quick the realities of what this is from a corporate structure. Vince isn't coming back. And I think people have to come to grips with that. He'd like to come back, but it's not like you can just, oh, yeah, Vince, we're keeping the seat warm for you. Once you step down as CEO of a company to come back, even with majority shares, it sounds like it'd be catastrophic for him to do that. He'd have to wipe out everything for him to come back. Again, Vince makes money off of this. He has the majority shares. He's not going to risk profits and risk his pocket. That's why I think Vince isn't coming back. And again, in my opinion, that's a good thing. Pat, are you still there?
Well, sorry about that. Okay. Yes, I'm here.
Sure.
I would love to see Goat McMahon come back. I mean, it would be amazing. The vitriol, the crying. I mean, you'd have to get a life raft. I mean, well, you know, you're Cuban and I'm Puerto Rican, so we already have a life raft around here anyway, just in case. But it would be, I mean, just mark tears everywhere, all over the street. You wouldn't be able to get anywhere. And maybe Vince could come back and take the business even higher than he already has. Who knows?
Also, Pat, I'll let you finish, but also, too, the Wall Street Journal report also mentioned that when they talked about Vince's interest in coming back, they also did drop a new report this week, seeing that two more women have now come forward seeking damages from McMahon. Again, former WWE Rita Chatterton, the original referee in question from the 80s, and a former California Spa employee, the latter of whom had an accusation that had not been previously reported yet. And again, amid the numerous sexual misconduct allegations, an investigation from the board into the matter, and apparently the SEC and the U.S. attorneys were kind of sniffing around. I think this is what prompted Vince to step down. I don't know, man. It just seems like Vince may not want to risk this. If more allegations are coming out, if the U.S. attorney and the SECs smell blood in the water, Vince might have to just say, I'm going to stay on the sidelines. That's, I think, what the Wall Street Journal was reporting today. I'm sorry, this week. I'm sorry. Continue, bro. I'm sorry.
I mean, again, man, you know, it's Vince could just come back and hang out backstage. Do whatever the fuck he wants. It's his company. You know, it's his fucking company. And it's interesting how these things just keep popping up anytime Vince's name gets mentioned again. You know, there's just a huge, huge, huge effort to try and get Vince canceled, to try and get Vince, destroyed. You know, I mean, was Vince a scumbag probably to women? Maybe. Who knows? You know, has he had affairs? Has he done things that he's not proud of? Yeah, we all have, you know. But Vince did what he had to do to keep the company going. And what he did outside of it really makes no difference to me. It really doesn't. He's a powerful dude. He's a charismatic dude. Women are going to flock to him. They're going to see he's a man of influence. He's a man of power. You know, it is what it is. None of that stuff bothers me. But I think at least, even if he doesn't come back, you know, which what you said made a lot of sense in terms of him,
you know, having to get rid of Stephanie and Nick and, you know, and Hunter. Vince could just come back and hang out backstage. Vince could do whatever. I mean, Vince could literally sit there and just do whatever. And he could technically be working, but nobody would know because he'd just be there. He could come back and visit. Plenty of people go back and visit after they don't work there anymore. But I don't know. I'm inclined to believe that it's probably not going to happen, as much as I'd love to see it, as much as I would just absolutely love to see it.
Well, Pat, let's dissect that for a minute, because I think that, you know, and I talked to a lot of people this week, friends of mine that listen to our podcast, my friends from grad school that listen, that we opine, we have a group chat, other group chats I'm in. It just seemed like the consensus among a lot of fans, fellow fans of mine and friends, were like, hey, listen, you know, this was just a black eye. You know, Vince can't keep it in his pants. I get it. The amount of NDAs that you're forcing people to sign, you know, again, to some people it's a bad look because of what NDAs is really symbolic of. Again, I'm not an attorney, but, you know, whether – and again, I'm not trying to make this a political thing, but, you know, here in New Jersey, folks, you know, if you've read anything about NDAs, you know it's been in the headlines for some years now, especially in the governor's office with what's happened with women that have had allegations of misconduct. Not against the governor, but, again, women, you know, alleging that there was a climate in New Jersey that, you know – contributed towards women being harassed and sexually assaulted in the workplace, in government, et cetera. You know, NDAs carry a certain negative connotation. And I think that that's where wrestling fans look at it and say, well, you know, when you force someone to sign an NDA, it's not a good look, or you're not admitting guilt or whatever. Again, some fans get sanctimonious. I'm with you completely. I don't really care what Vince does outside, you know, what he does with his pants and whatever. I don't really care per se. I think the optic that bothers me, again, listen, as a shareholder, I'm ecstatic. I mean, is it a coincidence that Vince being gone and the stock price went up? I mean, I'm ecstatic. So believe me, I'm the wrong person to ask there. But I think from a creative perspective as a fan, this is where fans get fickle, though, Pat, because fans are like, well, you know, while Vince was not counted to be declining like other people we like to reference in pop culture or in politics, you know, a lot of fans, while WWE is still very profitable, while WWE was getting still good ratings, you know, to a lot of fans, while something, and we talked about this off the air this week, and I'm not trying to draw an apples and oranges comparison, but something can be profitable, but still not be very good in the eyes of some of a fan base. You know, case in point, I brought up this sort of real world sports analogy. You know, the Washington Redskins / Commanders, whatever the fuck they're called, you know, are one of the most valuable NFL franchises according to Forbes list every year, when they rank the most viable sports franchises on the planet, not just in North America, but globally. And for all the shit that my Cowboys get for not winning the Super Bowl, the Redskins have gone even longer without a Super Bowl, but they still are very, very, very profitable. The New York Knicks are arguably one of the top three NBA franchises still in the world. And they've gone, again, I wasn't even born, okay? I know, insert old joke here. Since the last time they won an NBA championship. That's how far along it's been. They haven't been relevant in 20 years, yet Cablevision and the Knicks as a brand continue to be very profitable. Doesn't mean it's very good. And I think some fans equate, well, yeah, WWE's making money, and WWE's having record sales and merch and profits and ratings, but to a certain sector of the fan base, yet they still watch, because we're all sadists. That's what we pro wrestling fans are. But for a lot of pro wrestling fans, you know, we weren't really happy with Vince and creatively. You know, him stepping down in the eyes of a lot of fans, though, Pat, was a blessing. And they look at it like, you know what? We love what Paul was doing with NXT. We know we're confident that he knows how to book. I get it. Some people that he's brought back during the summer and fall have been underwhelming. Some fans have said that, too. Again, I think the optic is that, you know what, Vince being away and Vince stepping down was probably a good thing for WWE. It hasn't lost money. The stock is much better now since 6 months ago. It's still doing record gate. It's still drawing people into stadiums. It's selling merch like crazy. There's an uptick in subscriptions to Peacock. Again, yes, Vince is the go-to promoters. No one's ever going to deny it. Anyone who's industry honest will say yes. He is the go-to promoter. No one can touch Vince McMahon. I agree with you on that. But the idea that, hey, maybe Vince needed to step away because there were elements of the product that were getting stale and getting blah. I don't think that's wrong though, Pat.
Yeah, no, they disliked it so much they couldn't stop tuning in.
No, you're right. You're right.
I'm sorry, bro, but you know, they lose me with that shit. We hate it. We don't like it. Vince sucks. Stop watching. Nah, but, you know, I like this thing, and I want to see how this is going to pan out because wrestling fans are abusive. They're abusive. They're sadomasochists, bro. I hate it, but I can't stop watching it. That's basically what it is, man. That's basically what it is. I don't watch things I don't like. I watch wrestling. You know why? Because I like it. For fucking better or worse, I like it. Whether it's AEW, whether it's New Japan, whether it's Impact, whether it's AAA, whether it's old VHS tapes or old DVDs or WWE, I watch it because I like it. And for as much as I might not act like I don't like it, I do like it, and that's why I keep watching it. But I understand that, and I carry on with it. And there's things sometimes that I might not like on a program, but I'll still watch anyway because I like the actual art of it. Like, I'm sorry, man, but, like, you know, fans complain, oh, well, it wasn't better with Vince. You still kept fucking watching it. Stop watching it if you don't like it. You're still generating ratings for him. And you're still watching it now. Even though Paul's in charge, you're still watching it. So even when Vince was in charge at the end and Paul was in charge at the beginning and fucking this one or that one was in charge, you're still going to watch because that's all they know. So I'm sorry if I don't take those kind of things seriously. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry if I do not.
No, no, I'm with you. And I think that the reason this is such a divisive topic, I think, is number one, with the documentary coming out this week, with the whispers that Vince would want to come back, with the Wall Street Journal reporting that two more women have come forward, I just think that, again, it's a divisive topic because it's clearly tribal. There's no middle ground here. It's almost like disliking Vince McMahon or liking Vince McMahon, there's no middle ground. It's like the Yankees, Notre Dame, the Lakers, Real Madrid, the Cowboys. It's like there's no middle ground. You either like them or you don't. There's no middle ground here. And I think that Vince also is in this category as well, where there's no middle ground for fans. You either love Vince or you don't. And I think that that's what makes this topic, again, as divisive and, to be honest, toxic, because there's a toxicity that's involved with wrestling fans. That we are sadists. You know, we do watch even if we don't like. Listen, I'm a diehard Cowboys fan. I haven't seen a Super Bowl title in 27 years. But I still watch it because I guess I'm a sucker and I punish myself. Just like as a Yankee fan, they're going on 13 years without a World Series championship. I still watch because I'm a fan and I will put myself through the ringer and I'll punish myself. I think wrestling fans are probably the highest level of toxicity because they do it willingly without hesitation. But I think they bitch and moan the most of, I would argue, of any fan base, of any genre, comic book movies, pop culture, music, television, sports, above any fan base. It's the most toxic because they're sadists, because we keep watching, Pat. I think that's undeniable, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. And wrestling, unlike those sports that you mentioned, you know, wrestling's predetermined. All those other things, you don't know what the fuck's going to happen. So I understand why people tune in. Because maybe that'll be the one game that'll spark the run that'll get them back in the playoffs or whatever. I get that. But with wrestling, everything's predetermined. And if you've watched it long enough, you know where it's going. You know where it's going. They might throw you a couple of curveballs here and there, no problemo. But overall, you know where it's going. You know what I mean? You know where it's going to go. So, I don't know, man. To me, again, it's more crying from the fans. It's more crying from the marks. It's just completely, like, unnecessary, and it's like, spare me, man. Spare me. You people hate it so much, you keep watching it. You all want to complain about it like you actually know something about it. You've all been watching it just like we have. I mean, I actually went and I trained, and I actually tried to do something in the business, and I understood how things worked. And there's plenty of other people that did the same thing, too. But at the end of the day, these people don't know more than Vince McMahon. They don't know more than Triple H. They definitely know more than Tony Khan. But, you know, it's like, come on, man. Like, let it go. Let it go. People just need to drop it already. You know, Vince McMahon is the Michael Myers to the wrestling fans, Laurie Strode. Like, that's what he is. Like, I swear, I feel like these fans, like, see Vince popping up behind a bush somewhere, and they're like, what? Was that Vince? And then he's gone. You know? Like, it's sick, man. Get some help, people. Get some help. Get some fucking help, all right?
Well, again, it's going to be a topic that's going to continue to be divisive, though, man, because as we mentioned earlier, with this, the new Wall Street Journal report, and I'm sure this is not going to be the end of it. I'm sure that there's going to be some whispers. And again, this is what makes these marked journalists salivate, because this is what gives them traffic and clicks. It allows them to hypothesize. It allows them to speculate.
Yep.
It allows them to just get involved with hearsay about what's going to happen with Vince McMahon. I think it'll be interesting to see. We've talked about this off the air. I mean, again, I think since the summer, really, I think the week of SummerSlam in late July, you know, Paul Levesque, you know, the CCO, Chief Content Officer, I think, has, you know, for a lot of fans, it's been a breath of fresh air. He's brought back guys that Vince just did not see something in, and we're going to find out. Now, again, rumors are circulating that Paul Levesque is feeling very underwhelmed with guys and girls he's brought back, whether it's Hit Row, whether it's Johnny Gargano, whether it's Dexter Lumis, whether it is Karrion Kross and Scarlett. It remains to be seen. Again, we have Rumble season coming up. We're going to find out, leaning into the Rumble on a Saturday night, which is great. I love Saturday night PLEs. And what happens into WrestleMania? There's still a lot of conjecture. There's still nothing confirmed as to whether or not Dwayne Johnson will be wrestling at WrestleMania. Again, Billy Body has reported it's a done deal. A lot of fans remain skeptical, but we're going to find out. But certainly this week, with Vince intimating they'd like to return, obviously, listen, let's be honest, dude. The memes have been going crazy on Instagram. It's like Johnny Gargano and everyone else are like, oh, God, my employment's in danger. You know, it's funny memes and all that stuff. And, you know, marks get off on all that nonsense. But I think it would be very interesting what happens if the Wall Street Journal, because the Wall Street Journal is not going to die on this, dude. They're not going to let this die. They're going to keep reporting. They're going to keep digging. Let's find out what happens in 2023. But from what it seems now, again, corporate structure-wise, Vince is not coming back. If he did, it would really start a chain reaction that could be financially costly to the company. And that's something that maybe they can't recover from immediately. You know, you start losing millions of dollars in stock shares, you start having investors and advertisers pull out because maybe they don't want to be associated with Vince. That's one thing. Listen, if it's true that Vince is upset that people advised him wrongly, okay, we'll find out. I don't know who his attorney is. I don't know what firm he pays out on retainer. It'll be very interesting to see what legal advice he gets moving forward. If he leaked this or if his attorneys leaked this, what happens in the new year, Pat? So, folks, stay tuned. This might not be the end of the name Vince McMahon in the headlines anytime soon. So,
so basically what you're telling me is that there's no chance in hell that he comes back. Is that what you're saying?
No chance. That's what you got. Dun, dun, dun. Yep. I would say, yep. According to what we see, again, in a corporate structure, brother, it remains to be seen, but stay tuned, folks. You know, we'll be talking about it here, obviously on the air, as new things do develop. Pat, on this day in pro wrestling history, some notable things here, some names. 99, again, on this day, December the 16th, as we're recording today, on this day 99 years ago, wrestling legend Frank Gotch passed away from uremic poisoning in his hometown of Humboldt, Iowa. He was only 39 when he passed. So a sad day in wrestling history almost 100 years ago, with the passing of Frank Gotch. In addition, 26 years ago today, NWA and WCW presented Starrcade 90 Collision Course, which you can watch on Peacock with, you know, 57 ads, which took place from the historic...
If you're a cheapskate.
Hey, listen, it's Christmas season, okay? We're saving our money here. From the historic Kiel
Auditorium. It's also Hanukkah, and... too. Happy holidays,
yeah.
Fern. Happy holidays,
yeah,
by the way.
Happy Festivus. Happy Hanukkah, absolutely. From the historic Kiel Auditorium, obviously, you know, an upgrade from pay-per-view buys at the time from the 1989 edition in the main event. Ric Flair was revealed to be the Black Scorpion, as Sting defeated the Black Scorpion in a cage match to retain the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. Dick the Bruiser was a special guest referee. Without question, obviously not the best book main event that we can remember in pro wrestling history. Sting retaining against the Black Scorpion. On this day 16 years ago, Lucha Libre legend Blue Demon died of a heart attack on his way home from his morning training session. He was 78 years old as he passed away in Mexico. In addition to that, 10 years ago today, in Caguas, Puerto Rico, Carlito defeated John Heidenreich to win the World Wrestling Council Universal Heavyweight Championship on that day. 9 years ago today as well, WWE presented Armageddon from the Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh, the Igloo, home of the NHL's Pittsburgh Penguins. The main event, Edge defeated Batista and The Undertaker in a triple threat match to win the World Heavyweight Championship. An interesting Ring of Honor thing. 4 years ago today, Ring of Honor presented Final Battle, Doomsday from the Hammerstein Ballroom. Some years ago, maybe the year is off here, as Kevin Steen defeated El Generico, a.k.a. Sami Zayn, in Ladder War 4 to retain the Ring of Honor World Championship. I think that was probably a misprint on the website there, as it obviously was more than 4 years ago. I think probably early, maybe mid-2000s there as well. In addition to that, AJ Styles, best known as Alan Jones, obviously his real life name, left TNA after 11 years with the company. He would soon make his WWE debut at the Royal Rumble in 2016. Folks, all this good stuff happened on this day, December the 16th, in pro wrestling history. Pat, before we call it a show here, what to look out for, brother?
Nothing coming up anytime soon. Just really looking forward to enjoying the holidays with the kids. And, don't drink and drive, people. Stop being such sanctimonious assholes. Be a little bit more sensitive. And, don't violate any contracts, all right? Because you'll have no chance in hell of coming back.
There you go. Sorry, well said there by the PBR superstar. Folks, again, check out...
Don't put my social media up. I don't want anybody to fucking talk to me. I don't want to hear from anybody. You want to hit the page up, hit the page up. Great. Don't talk to me personally. I'm going to think you're trying to, get me in a pyramid scheme or get me to sell Herbalife. Same thing. But just keep it to the show. Write something dirty back to us. Write something fucked up. Tell us to go fuck ourselves. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? But just write something. Don't send me any personal stuff. Fuck off. Thank you.
All right. Fair enough. Folks, coming up on Monday on Real Talk via Jersey First TV, live at 6 p.m. Eastern time. You can check it out on LinkedIn as well as the Jersey First YouTube page, in addition to Facebook Live via StreamYard. I will have Western New York Commissioner Cosmo Cirillo on. He did announce he's running for mayor. So clearly, as the mayoral election heats up in the small town of Western New York here in Hudson County, stay tuned, since former Mayor Felix Rocha may be announcing this weekend, which would ultimately create a triple threat for the mayoral office in Western New York, a hotly contested mayoral election coming up, folks, for sure in 2023. I'll have Cosmo Cirillo on exclusively live at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Real Talk via Jersey First TV. Also, I want to send a shout out to, I'm going to try to hold it together here. One of my former students passed away this week. Daniel DeMarco was one of my favorite students as I was teaching part-time while in grad school, while getting my PhD. And we grew to become friends over the years. He was a staunch conservative. He was always very supportive of my media brand. Told me on multiple occasions, don't quit, Fernando. You're really good at what you do, and you're going to make it big. Just stick with it. He unfortunately passed away from a heart attack this Tuesday in his bathroom. He is survived by his lovely wife, Lizette, who I had a chance to meet in previous years. Daniel was only 36 years old, and he was a guy that was a carpenter, just opened a new business, was a father. A really good guy that I came to know for so many years, and not just because he was one of my favorite students, but he was a good man, a decent man. Just a dedicated father. For anyone who knew Daniel DeMarco, services will be this Monday in Lodi at the DiChiara Funeral Home. You know, Dan was a good man. He's, you know, there were a lot of times I wanted to quit doing media. He would watch me, was a devoted watcher of not just my show on Mondays with Real Talk, going back to Eyes on NJ News, but when I did my show with Insider NJ and even my podcast in Hudson County. He was a guy who followed me on social media, very devoted fan, and to hear that he passed away from 36 at 36 this week just breaks my heart. And when I read his obituary, you know, I just, you know, I'll never forget your words of encouragement, Dan. You know, you told me to stick with it, and I'll keep fighting for you every Monday night. Because you were a good man and a guy that was trying to make it in politics as an operative, and you were a good guy, a good dad, a good New Jerseyan. You're going to be missed. And for anyone who knew Dan, like me, who had the privilege of knowing Dan, you know, my heart goes out to your family. You were a good, decent man. And I love you, and I'll keep fighting for you every Monday night. So, again, Daniel DeMarco passing away this week at the age of 36, a good man. Who left us too soon. So I want to make sure I got that out there because there are fans of mine that, you know, former students that listen to this show who are pro wrestling fans. If you knew Dan, you know, take a moment today just to honor him because he was a really, really good, decent person. Folks, again, write to the show, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Certainly we'd love to hear from you, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. As Pat said beautifully, if you love us, tell us. If you hate us, tell us. If you want to go fuck ourselves, tell us. It doesn't matter. It's the holiday season. Okay? Tell us what you like about the show. Write to us. We welcome feedback. A shout-out to D. Rotten, who oversees the show, who plugs it for us, who creates clips on Facebook, on Instagram, and Twitter, to Fancast Media for their support of this show. We love you for believing in what Patrick and I and our vision for the show continues to be, as we're completing really a year on the air here. And wow. I can just say that I am so grateful from our first episode on January the 20th of this year, as we're about to complete a full calendar year. I cannot say enough for all of you to tune in every week. You write to us, you follow us on Instagram @working_themarks. Also on Twitter, check us out @working_marks. Follow us. Share us, folks. Sharing is caring. Share our episodes. blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. I just have to say that without you, our loyal listening audience, this show would not be possible. So on behalf of Pat, I just want to say thank you. It is the holiday season. We're thankful to you. We're thankful to your devotion to the show, to the social media traffic, to helping us increase this show's visibility as we'll continue to raise hell every week going into 2023 on this program. Pat, I'll give you the last word here, man, as we're about to go off the air.
Yeah, man, I really can't say much else, man, and my condolences to your friend and his family. My condolences to you as well. I've unfortunately had the bad luck of losing, you know, many friends way too soon, and I understand how much that stings, and I'm sure he'll be watching over you, and I'm sure he's very proud of you and everything you're doing. And yeah, folks, just enjoy the holidays. Enjoy your time with your family. You know, we're here today. We're gone tomorrow. I know we break a lot of balls. I know we talk a lot of shit on this program, but we're humans too, and we love the people we love. And, you know, it's important to keep those things in mind and to just spend the time that you have with the ones that you love and enjoy the holidays, however you choose to celebrate it.
Well said, folks. He is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR superstar himself, Patrick Rivera. I am New Jersey's premier journalist, and Fernando Uribe. Folks, it is the week before Christmas. I'll be in Miami next weekend for Christmas, and Pat and I will figure out when we do a show, maybe another show before the end of 2022. But I just want to say thank you for supporting us this year. As we debuted on January 20th, we didn't know what to expect with this show, folks. We didn't know if two people would listen besides ourselves. But we've got an audience. We plan on keeping it. That's why we work hard for you folks. So, again, on behalf of my amazing host here, the PBR Superstar, I want to wish you all a very happy holiday season. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Festivus. God bless you all for supporting this show. And we're going to continue raising hell in 2023 because nobody does it better every single week, folks, because the PBR Superstar and the Professor, you know what we do. We're always working the marks here on Blog Talk Radio. Enjoy yourselves, folks. Please party responsibly, and we'll see you soon here on Blog Talk Radio.